Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey there, gang. You're about to hear episode 8 of Shame Feeder, which is actually the final episode of this season. If you've liked what you've heard, I'd love it if you could give the episode a bit of a subscribe on iTunes or any of the apps you're listening to it on. If you can give reviews or share it anywhere, that'd be fantastic. If I get enough of a push on this, I'm actually going to look into seeing if I can do another season, specializing in different areas. So please show it all your love. But meanwhile, enjoy this episode with another amazing guest, Andrew Hansen.
Whether it's relationships, work, or just with friends, there are plenty of things that I've done that I'll suddenly think about and feel ashamed of. But surely I'm not the only one who has this happen. So I'm going to be talking to a whole bunch of people and asking them about what they're ashamed of and how they think that's influenced the person they are today.
This episode's guest is comedian, writer, and all-around entertainer, as well as member of the Chasers team, Andrew Hansen.
And then if it's funny to watch back, that's all right, but I never enjoyed the process at all. God, I was green. I mean, actually, that is something I'm a bit ashamed of. And I've always been a bit intimidated by people who are older than me. Always. And if someone's older than me, I'm sort of terrified of them.
So this is, and I don't think you know this, by the way, guest who's about to be interviewed, this is the final episode of Shame Feeder.
Oh.
And if you've been following, I hope you've enjoyed a little bit of exploration on shame, how it influences, how maybe it helps us with career and life. I'm not sure. For some, I don't think it has. But what I'm really excited about is the guest for this episode, a guy whose work I've been a big fan of for a long time, from CNNN days, I think, as a kid. Andrew Hansen joins me. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for saying you're a big fan. You've been watching a long time then, CNNN.
Yeah.
That was, 2002.
Yeah. Yeah. Very much remember growing up with that as a kid and just sort of loving it. It was fantastic. And then Chasers War and Everything and everything since. But I mean, I want to jump straight into it, and because I know you've done a lot of projects and you're always doing more projects. What would you say some of your biggest achievements are?
Oh, man. Achievements?
Yeah.
See, I'm not sure I've had achievements. I mean, I've just kind of stumbled around in this business. I guess every show that you manage to crank out, you might consider that an achievement.
Okay.
But no, I think for me, achievements are much more personal things, like having a kid and getting a driver's license, and those are my huge achievements.
Having a kid to getting a driver's license.
They were both about equally difficult for me. I found. I mean, I'm a very unco person. Getting the license was it was like labor. I mean, it was really agonizing. I failed the test and failed it again and failed it again. It was awful.
Wow.
So,
that's interesting. Okay, so, well, look, and that's the thing. Like, it's been interesting interviewing different people. It's very much, there's been an even split between people without full families and people with full families, and very different responses to that question. But career-wise, is there any achievements, though? I'm assuming car stand is the highest.
Yeah. No, career-wise, look, I guess every show is a kind of an achievement, but, there are different levels of, I mean, every production's different. Sometimes you're happier with the show than other times. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you think, that was a bit of a stinker. And another time you think, it was all right. I'm more relieved. I mean, see, it's more a sense of relief, though, when I've managed to do a show. I just kind of, oh, thank God. Rather than feeling like it's an achievement, I feel like it's just a weight off my shoulders that, oh, I got away with it. And I mean, Craig and I always look at each other during the stressful moments. Craig Rucastle, if we've worked together on something, and he's one of the other Chase guys, for listeners who haven't met. He's the gap-toothed one. And we look at each other when it gets stressful and say, why do we do this to ourselves? Why are we doing this again? And we never have a good answer to that question. But then it feels good if you Sometimes it feels good, you know, if you finish the show and you're reasonably happy with parts of it. Mm. I'm really happy with all of it. Depends what it is. But yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, I find that really... I just kicked the entire table. The people hear that, doesn't matter.
You kicked it.
I find that really... Yeah. The show's about to kick the bucket anyway. I find that really interesting. The second question I like to ask, and for some it's the same, for some it's different, is... We've already covered achievements, but is there something you're most proud of?
Recently it was actually getting a book deal. I was very proud of that because for some reason, because I grew up thinking books, you know, I think my mum sort of has this religious reverence for books, which some people have. Mm. I think it might be a generational thing too, you know, like people my age and younger. We're kind of pretty dismissive of media, you know, whereas older people sort of think if something's published, it's amazing, you know, it's like the word of God. And so my wife and I are writing this kid's book, and I'm actually much prouder of that than the TV shows and the comedy shows. I mean, a lot of the comedy stuff I've done, I've kind of done it more because I've just been trying to avoid getting a proper job, because I've had proper jobs and they're really awful. I hated them and I was bad at them. I've organized life so that I've tried to find ways of not working in a proper useful job, and that led me to do comedy. But it wasn't as if it was something that I was burning to do, or you know. So it wasn't a huge achievement. Whereas getting this book deal was good because it's a kid's book we're writing. It's a fantasy story. It's totally different from my comedy stuff. It's a funny adventure story with full of magic and mummies and. It's about animal mummies, actually. Okay. And that's the kind of stuff that turns my dials up. Not, you know, people are going to meet me and think, oh, so you must be solely interested in topical comedy. And I'm not really. I'm not that interested in topical comedy. I prefer narrative comedy. And even though I haven't really made narrative comedy in my career, that's my favourite kind. Or wacky sketch comedy.
Yeah. Slapstick?
I love slapstick. Yeah, I love that. And we've done a lot. I mean, we have actually done a lot of that on TV in The Chaser. Mm. And more so in my stage shows, probably. But getting a kid's book up that's about animal mummies, that I'm really proud of. I'm really proud and excited about that, because that's what I'm actually into.
Yeah. So is it, I'm really curious on this, and I don't know how much you can give away. Is it like novel or children's book with pictures?
It's a children's novel. So, it's a short novel for eight-year-olds, basically.
Okay.
And it's a funny story. It's called Bab Sharky and the Animal Mummies.
Cool.
And it's about a kid who finds a pharaoh's beard that has magic powers, and it leads him to a city that's populated by these animal mummies that are brought to life.
That's fantastic.
And this is what I really want to be doing. No, Chaser fans will have switched off long, you know, when they hear about that. They won't be interested. But it's not for you. It's for kids.
It does sound a little bit like, I don't know. This might be a niche reference. That episode of Black Books where they write a children's book and they're just trying to throw in he's missing a balloon. And, all that sort of stuff.
That's an apt reference, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so you say you're proud of that, and you know that there's that reverence that comes with the older generation with publishing things.
Yeah.
When you got the deal, who did you tell about it?
Yeah. Well, my parents, because it was my mum. It was something she'd understand, you know, because often, mum and dad are quite baffled by the sort of stuff I do. Like, if they say, what are you doing? Is they're always worried I'm unemployed. You know, what are you doing? Have you got any work? Because they're very ABC people, so they notice. They sort of notice like my colleagues who, if they're doing something obscure on ABC local radio, my parents kind of think that's the biggest. They think that's like Hollywood in their mind. Yeah, yeah. That's like it's as big as you can get.
So you're going to have to do is like a book tour around like local ABC radio when you're released. Right?
I know because I'm not on ABC local radio, and my parents are worried. They think they don't know where I am or what I'm doing. And if I say to them, oh well, I've been doing a corporate gig, or you know, oh, I've been doing a tour. I've been touring a stage show. I think that's baffling to mum and dad. They don't really know what I'm talking about. It's like I've just said, I've wrapped myself up in fairy floss, or you know, it's like I've said, I've jumped into a pit. I mean, it's just weird. You know, it's not part of their radar, so they think I'm doing nothing.
Yeah,
effectively, I'm not doing anything. or if I'm pitching shows to networks, or that doesn't sound like work. So unfortunately, I had to resort to getting a children's book deal, and then I could go to mum and dad and say, "Look, I'm writing a book," and they know what that is.
Yeah. Did you leave out that it was a children's book?
No, they're happy. They're okay with that. They've seen children's book. They know what a children's book is. so they're okay with it. They're happy with that. Yeah. And that's ultimately in the end, isn't that? That's what we're all trying to do, is please our parents, aren't we?
I guess so. It's the main reason I go to the gym a few months before I know I have to visit them.
Hey, show them your washboard abs.
Oh, not even that. Just like, I think the first time I moved away from home, when I finally went back, I flew back in. Dad picked me up from the airport. I sat in the passenger seat. He just reached over and patted my stomach and just went, "You put on a few kilos."
Oh, that's crippling.
Yeah.
Right? No, you've got to make your dad proud by having it. Yeah.
Not that he has any abs to talk about.
But no, but you're, but he doesn't have to impress you. He's your dad.
Yeah.
Whereas you've got to make him proud by getting rid of that gut.
Yeah.
Boy, I'm lucky I'm skinny. I'm lucky I'm thin. Because otherwise I'd have another thing that I'd have to worry about with when I visit mum and dad.
Well, okay. So publishing, and then, you know, also your child and getting a car license. Are those the big three?
Yeah. Well, they're little achievements, aren't they? I mean, I suppose in your work. I mean, I'd go sketch by sketch, I think.
Yeah,
like, okay. I'm thinking about, you know, last year with some of the Chaser guys, we made this TV series about the election in Australia.
Mm.
And it was called The Chaser's Election Desk. And there were bits of the show I was really pleased with, and bits I wasn't. Yeah, there were bits of the show I thought, oh, that's not very good. But the bits that I was pleased with, I thought, oh, well, that's good. And comedy's like that. It's it's really up and down. It's a bit patchy, comedy. It's very rare to sit down and see a comedy show that you think is brilliant from start to finish.
100%.
It almost never happens. And that's okay. I mean, thank God. Otherwise, I'd be very upset because I've never made a perfect one, and I probably never will.
But there's that to aspire.
Well, I can aspire to that. But at least there's the odd sketch here and there that I think, oh yeah, okay, I'm happy with that one.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Is there any sketch that stands out?
Well, my favourite ones are usually ones that are spearheaded by the other guys in the group. I think my favourite one of all time, I still remember very fondly, was a thing we called the Logie's Bonehead Challenge.
Oh, yeah.
And it was done quite a few years ago now. I can't remember whose concept it was, but it involved Chaz Licciardello. We all had invitations to the Logies that year, and his challenge was to try and just get into the background of as many shots as he possibly could on the Logies telecast. and I thought it was a kind of amusing concept. And Chaz, he applies himself to these things like you wouldn't believe. He's a real sort of mathematician. He's a science. He's got a science degree, and he's a little bit aspy. He's very sort of he's very particular about details. Probably too particular. He's very focused on things. So he had a map of the entire Logie's ballroom which he'd studied and had in his brain, and he knew all the cameras exactly where they were and he figured out in advance who the cameras would be getting shots of in the audience as the awards were announced. And he did manage to quite brilliantly get into the background of an incredible number of these shots. But he also it was also a good way of just taking the piss out of the whole sort of tacky, bombastic nature of the Logies because Chaz was... You know, he was just making fun of the ridiculousness of this ceremony. He'd get behind these people and pretend that he was overwhelmed with joy when they won the award, and he'd be fist pumping the air when some boring person like Richard Wilkins would win an award. Sorry, Richard. I always use Richard Wilkins as an example of a boring. He's a very lovely man, Richard Wilkins. He's actually very nice.
just can't put much expression on his face.
Or ever. Yeah. I mean, he never could, you know. I'd run into him sometimes and apologise, and then I go and make fun of him again in public. I'm a very shallow person. So I'm proud of the Logie's Bonehead Challenge, even though I had very little to do with it.
Yeah,
I mean, it was on my show, but it was mostly Chaz's segment.
I find that really interesting. Well, look, I'm sure I could talk a lot more because you have a lot of career history and stuff to talk about. But what a next cover off on shame, if you're up for it.
Oh, we're up to the shame bit.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the bit I'm terrified about.
Keep up to date on the latest episodes by subscribing to Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, and all other apps.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So, okay, achievements, too many to name.
Oh, too many. Point, so right? Many, yeah, achievements. So many. I'm just a man of achievement.
I'm
overwhelming.
Overwhelmed by your achievements.
Overwhelming achievement. I can't deal with how many.
But I'm sure there's got to be some shame in there, right?
Oh, look, this is the thing. I'm actually not a very shamed person. And I think you were saying to me, most people who agree to come on podcasts are hard to ashame.
Yeah.
And I am too.
It was very difficult. I've really had to, for most people, delve into their childhood.
That is true. You sometimes get some sort of shame and guilt when you're growing up.
Yeah.
But as a grown-up, no, I haven't had that much shame. I must be a very, very dull person because I haven't done anything wicked enough to be ashamed of. But you know what? Weirdly, one thing, though, that has always made me a bit ashamed and a bit anxious is, well, grey pubes is where it starts. Finding a grey pube is really, really shameful. It's deeply shameful, especially there, because that's meant to be the most attractive part of our body. That's meant to be the bit that excites people. When it starts to, give up the ghost, when it starts to outlive you, or you outlive it. Whatever. Yeah, I got that the wrong way around, didn't I? I don't want to be outlived by my junk. I'll be at my funeral. My penis is going to be leaping around on top of my coffin.
It gives the eulogy.
That's right. No, I mean the other way around. So, because it's about getting old, and I've always felt a keen sense of shame about being too old to do things, and it started because I've never quite known what to do with my life, and the first thing I thought of doing, or one of the first things, was becoming a musician, which I tried to do for a while. The thing about being a musician is if most really successful musicians have made it really big really young, like by the time, incredibly young, like by the time they're 19 or 20, these people are at the top of the charts, and I remember on my 22nd birthday feeling terribly depressed because I had this vague notion that I wanted to be a musician, but I hadn't applied myself very well to it anyway. I was all distracted by all the sort of business of being young. And I was moaning, I used to moan to my friends, I'm past it, I'm 22, I'm never going to make it now, I'm never going to make it, and my friends used to ridicule me because, I remember Craig Rucastle at the time teasing the shit out of me for saying, 22, I'm such an old man because I'm 22. I'm 22, I'll never make anything of my life. I've got no time left because I'm 22. But, but he's not a fan of musicians. He didn't understand the music industry, He thinks that people's career, he only knows lawyers and boring people like that whose careers peak when they're in their 50s. You've got till your 50s. You've got time. I'm like, no, I don't, because I want to be a musician. So I was kind of ashamed to be a bit older. Also, my voice broke before anyone else's in high school. Okay. I was the first kid in I think I was the first kid in the whole school whose voice broke. I think I was in year 7 and there were year 12 kids whose voice hadn't broken yet. I sounded older than some of the teachers.
I actually had a similar sort of thing. Like, also
did you?
Started growing facial hair. And I think I...
Did you?
I took on Movember when in like year 10. And
year 10, Movember.
I think it was like I made it to the front of the local newspaper or something. Like, freak child grows beard. Like,
really?
Yeah, beat most of the teachers. I was very proud.
You were proud? See, I'd be ashamed. See, I would have been deeply ashamed to be so old.
Really?
Or so sort of prematurely aged. Yeah, like that. That's... Oh, yeah, look, in my mind, that's like those tabloid headlines that say, boy 13 are dad. You know those boys who become dads. I reckon the moustache is just as bad.
I love... So far you've compared having a child to getting a licence and having a beard to being a dad at the age of 13.
Well, I think they're the same. Can't you see the similarity of these things? They're clearly this is similar. Yeah. No, you were proud, but see, I was a bit ashamed. I mean, I admitted it actually to one of my... Although I was greatly comforted when one of my female friends... Because I was telling her, I was saying, oh, my voice, God, I'm so sorry. I feel so embarrassed about my deep, stupid deep voice. I said, 12-year-old me. It's, oh, I'm 12. I've just turned 12, you know. And I've got this voice. I'm like, oh, bloody hell, why do I sound like this when I'm only bloody 12? And she said...
probably didn't help you with smoking a pack of Whitney Blues or something.
It was that and the heavy drinking. But yeah, she... But this friend said, no, I think it's really good. She said, I think it's good. It's quite attractive. And no one had ever said I was attractive back then, especially not girls. Usually girls said, do you ever wash your hair? You know, I remember one girl saying that to me. So it was better.
Has that influenced you now? Because it seems like you've got...
It's washed nine times a day now. Like, it's like...
It's always got a lot of volume to it.
No, that's actually an unwashed. I must say, if I wash it, it loses all its volume. Yeah, no, this is in defiance of the girl who told me.
Yeah, should have known.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Always no, the reason it's got volume is it's kind of bed hair. It hasn't been washed in like 2 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. I mean...
You know, but as an adult, sure I don't care. See, as I say, you lose your... it's true. Childhood, you're ashamed of these things. Mm. So after that girl said the hair washing thing, I washed my hair like crazy, like 3 times a day.
really?
And, you know. Well, you know, it's gutting because I was 12, had this, you know, with my broken alcoholic voice and my greasy hair. Because my parents had never sort of taught me that you're supposed to have a shower in the morning. You know, I had them at night. until this point, until the girl, you know, noticed it. And also because back then I was combing my hair, you know, because I thought it was meant to be combed.
I lived by the comb as a kid.
Did you live by the comb? The rule of the comb.
The mum was like, you've got a comb.
Bad.
Use the comb.
And did you wet your hair first? Because that's... I used to get up and bleary-eyed, I'd just put my head under the tap and wet it so that it would comb down. I used to plaster it down over my forehead. And it was all greasy. You know, it was terrible. I looked appalling. And that girl was right.
Yeah, I love how much of this has just become hair chat, by the way.
It's important. It's the core of shame. I mean, people...
Appearance,
you know,
really.
People are very... people's appearance... God, we're all ashamed of our appearance.
Yeah, okay. So then moving forward, you know, being ashamed of things with age and not getting things done by a certain age.
Yeah, by a certain...
Does that still happen?
By these deadlines. It does. Yeah, it still happens to me, I think, you know. Yeah, because... Well, I'm not sure what my deadlines are supposed to be now because... I'm not... You know, I stopped trying to be a musician when I started being a comedian. And I think that with comedy, it's much more forgiving of your age. You know, you don't have to be... In fact, it's very rare for comedians to make it very big, very young. Because I think it's to do with the way you think. You've
to know a bit about life, don't you?
You've got to know a bit about life. Yeah, I think you've got to be at least 25 or 26, don't you? Unless you're an exceptional talent. Like, you know, we lost Sean Hughes the other day. He won Edinburgh. He won the big prize at Edinburgh when he was only 24 or something. Yeah, I mean, amazing. But that's rare. That's very rare.
Okay. But with deadlines, I don't know if you want me mentioning this or not, but... Before, when we were away from the microphones, you were mentioning, you know, you'd had your deadline for your book pushed back. Was there?
I did, yeah, yeah. The book's running a bit behind, I'm afraid.
When you were getting to that point where you had to contact the publisher and say,
I'm very embarrassed. Oh yeah, it's embarrassing not to meet a deadline. Is bad because you want to be reliable.
True.
You want to be reliable. But then I had this notion that authors are always late for their deadlines. And in many ways, maybe it's a point of pride. So I'm following, big fan of George R. R. Martin, like most people are.
So the ultimate non-deadline man.
Yeah, exactly. And I read on his blog, he occasionally posts an update saying, well, I've missed another deadline. I've never been good with deadlines. And I think I might need 3 more years than I originally, this sort of thing. And so I thought, well, if he can do it. But then again, people want to read his books, so he probably can do it, whereas I'm not sure I have that luxury.
Well, I think it's a case of there's this other author I've been reading in the whole fantasy genre as well, Ruthven. He did
I've heard of... I haven't read Ruthven
yet. He's written
two of
three, and the third one just hasn't been out for 7 years or some nonsense. People keep asking, and he just comes out and he says, when it's ready, you'll know.
Okay, right.
I don't think he gives deadlines or anything, or at least not publicly, like Martin does.
Well, but I guess these people have a track record, so maybe people will wait. But there's like that. I mean, I'm a huge Jeff Lynne fan. Speaking of music again, and Jeff Lynne, I mean, people were desperate for him to make another album after his album in 2001, and he didn't make one until 2015. It took 14 years. Yeah. So I kind of have a respect for that. Mm. But then, of course, he's a genius. He's allowed to take 14 years to make an album. I'm a big Roger Waters fan, and Roger Waters took even longer to make. I mean, what, his album came out this year and the last one was 92, I think. Like, what is it, 25 years? The first time in 25 years to have a new album. I've literally been waiting all this time for him to make another album.
Well, I love that idea. Creative sort of thinking, though, I haven't made it at this certain point in time and maybe getting to the point of giving up. Like, I reckon best example has to be Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah, well, Rodriguez.
Who literally just went, okay, well, the album didn't make it, and he fucked off to a farm, didn't he, for 10 years?
Well, I think he was just working on building sites and that sort of thing.
And didn't realise he'd become successful.
Yeah, well, amazing. Well, he's a genius, I think.
Wouldn't you love it, though, if, down the track you realised in some remote part of the world your music from your early 20s.
That's right, from the band that I'd never got a record deal with. It was actually massive in Peru. I'd go and perform the Andes or something.
Just with a pan flute or something.
Oh, you know my band. It was pan flute music.
Okay, well, look, so is that sort of saying, not meeting deadlines, sort of, I think, at the same point as, the whole way you're not getting things done by a certain age? Is that sort of what you're saying?
It's different. It's different. I think there's a kind of... No, there's something... I mean, oldness is not valued or liked in Australia, especially, and I've always been a bit suspicious of it, and I've always been a bit intimidated by people who are older than me. Always, if someone's older than me, I sort of terrified of them, and I've always been that way. No matter how old I get, I'm still terrified of anyone who's older than me. I don't know why. Maybe because I was brought up by strict school teachers, or God knows what it was that put this into me, But other people aren't. I'm always amazed when I see people who are totally relaxed around people who are twice their age, and I'm very envious of that. Yeah. I wish I could do that.
But, I mean, so you guys, though, through the chases, have done plenty of stunts that would be at the downfall of certain politicians who'd be a lot older. Is there no hesitance when it comes to approaching them and taking the mickey out of them?
There is from me. I've hated doing those stunts and pranks. I found them really stressful and horrible because I'm a non-confrontational person. Mm. So, Chris Taylor and Chaz Licciardello and I, we're very non-confrontational. Whereas Julian and Craig... They love getting in people's faces. They love rubbing people up the wrong way. It sets them on fire. Mm. It's their lifeblood. So they always loved going out and pissing people off and causing scenes and trouble. I liked comedy. I mean, I love comedy, and I like it if the result is funny. Yeah. Then I'm happy. I'm happy to suffer and go and make an ass of in public and upset people.
Yeah, okay.
And then if it's funny to watch back, that's all right. But I never enjoyed the process at all.
Okay.
Oh God,
that's
no.
Really interesting.
No, I don't. Yeah. Whereas people think I wanted to do all that stuff.
Ah.
I mean,
Okay.
The main stress too is with pranks is you've only got usually one take, and if you stuff it up, then you've got to sheepishly come back to the studio or to the office. Oh, stuffed it up, you know. I wasted a whole day's shooting and, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. If you don't get the camera angles right and all that.
It's not worth it. You've got no result. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
well, look, there's a few more things there, I think. Because when you told me, if I remember, that I want to talk about the age of... the shame of age and getting old. I think, like, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I feel like I've gotten a few more things out of you than just the old stuff.
I probably have. Yeah, I probably admitted to being ashamed of all sorts of things.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
Well, yeah. But with comedy, it's not so bad. I didn't mind being old. Okay. Different people, I mean, comedy ages quickly too, though. So it's hard to keep doing comedy for a long time, I think. I mean, you kind of hope that you've... fans will age with you. But they don't. People's sense of humor changes as they get older as well.
True.
So they're less likely to enjoy the stuff you're doing.
Unless your comedy changes.
I mean, there are some comics, though, who have had very long careers, and they've mostly done the same type of stuff. Like Barry Humphries kind of does the same kind of comedy now that he always has done. And I think his audience have kind of gone with him. Whereas, I guess on The Chaser, we've drifted much more in recent years towards sketches and clip reviews comedy, and we've done less pranks.
Well, okay, so we're sort of getting into the territory of the next segment, so I want to cover off on that next.
Just
connecting all the dots, if that's okay.
Let's connect the dots.
Awesome.
For extra content, check out the Sam Blacker page on Facebook.
Okay, so... a few bit different things of shame, mostly around age, and that seems to have influenced a lot of what you're doing.
Oh, it's so shameful to be aging.
But I find it really interesting. So we were just talking there, and I'd love to see if this is sort of where it goes. Would it be right to say then that with the comedy, like that whole idea of aging and stuff has influenced like changes in things you've done?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think my comedy has changed a little bit as the years have gone on. I think I've become a bit... better at writing comedy. I was green. I mean, in the that is something I'm a bit ashamed of. In CNNN, I was so green and naive. You know, I didn't have the concept of kind of writing for the show. I didn't understand that because I was 26 or something. So not much of my writing, I think, ended up in the first season of CNNN because I had to kind of learn. You can't just write any old thing. You know, this is what the show is. You've got to write something that suits the tone and the style, the house style of the show. So I had to kind of learn that, and I had to learn brevity, which I didn't know back then in comedy. TV comedy needs to be very tight, and all those sorts of things. So I sort of gradually got better at it. I think, weirdly though, the most popular Chaser show, as far as ratings went and just word of mouth, was The Chaser's War and Everything. But I actually think our scripts and our editing skills and our performance all got much better after that show.
Yeah, okay.
I think The Hamster Wheel and the election shows we did since then and some of the Media Circus sketches are far better by any objective measurement than The Chaser's War and Everything. But they're not as popular, those shows. I think there was just something in the air about War and Everything at the time.
Well, I remember literally it would have been a day ago, whatever day Melbourne Cup was. What's the day? Thursday. So Tuesday.
Yeah.
We did a whole thing on my radio show where it was like, we'll drive three listeners or a listener and their three friends to the Melbourne Cup and all this sort of stuff. And we got a car through a rental service. And the guy literally spruced it as, oh, this is the kind of car they used during the Chaser's Apex.
Oh. Really? What, it was a motorcade? It was a government car?
Yeah, like one of the big ones, or the same model or something.
Oh, really?
Like, it's got
really?
Such cut-through, like all that Chaser stuff.
You
still
can drive into anywhere with those cars. Yeah, well, it did back then. Yeah, I guess it did have cut-through, more than our later stuff. But I think we weren't as good at making TV back then.
Yeah.
And I think if you actually sit down and watch, you know, you're often disappointed when you re-watch an old movie or an old show that you thought you loved it, and you're like, oh, it's not as good as I remember.
I just watched Patch Adams,
and was it as good as you remember?
Dating, and she pointed out that he's just an annoying mature age student. Who thinks he knows more because of life experience.
That's a fair point.
That's ruined
Robin Williams' whole career. That's a real, because you could say that about most of his movies.
Yeah,
he's just a mature. Like, say that about Dead Poets Society really too, couldn't you?
Yeah, no, I totally understand.
No, you do, but yeah, and if you actually objectively watch things side by side. So I think I've got a bit better at comedy, even though I'm not as popular anymore, or not in the last year or so or whatever. Mm. But those things go up and down too. You know, everybody has their time, and then it goes away a bit, and then it comes back again, and then it goes away again. Yeah.
Okay. I want to try and connect some other dots. And this is a stab in the dark that could be completely off. And if it's two person as well, tell me.
Stab away.
So you've said, you know, in the past, you've made a few decisions based on, oh, I'm not getting this done by the time I expected it to, or deadlines sort of bring a bit of stress and stuff.
Mm.
And one of the things you've straight off mentioned that you're most proud of is your kid.
Mm. Mm.
Did that have, like, you know, getting something done by a certain point have any influence on when you chose to have a kid?
Oh, right. No. I mean, I probably had it later than than would be wise to. That was just. I think for me, I've always been late. I've always been late at doing everything.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I've stuff around and I never know what I want to do. I've always found decision making really hard.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I want to do at any given point. I kind of want somebody to say to me, you know, I think you should do this. But then when they do, I feel really resentful. Well, you're pushing me around. I want to do my own thing.
Yeah.
And then I go off and think, oh God, what do I do? I have no idea what I want to do. So I've run my whole life that way, career and personal things.
Have you gotten more that way with age, do you think? Like more confident to be able to sort of be like, no, I'm willing to be late?
Or? Not at all. Okay. I'm willing to be late. I actually don't mind being late.
Yeah.
That's fine because as I say, I don't want to grow old. Mm. You know, I don't want to feel old. I mean, there are these old people who aren't old, you know, that like you meet people who are 55. You know how there's this notion that you can retire at 55?
Yeah.
And there are people. I know people who are in their 50s and they go and move into retirement villages and they say, I'm old. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You're not old. You're like 3 days older than me almost. I mean, you know, worries me. I don't want to, you know, I'd want to be the kind of more that sort of, you know, Paul McCartney kind of person who is old but doesn't act it. You know, that's, which makes sense because if you don't feel old, then... you don't have to be old, I think.
Until you
fall apart.
Like a Kanye song and someone says, oh, how great's Kanye making this Paul McCartney get his first breakthrough?
People said that. Yeah,
that was amazing.
It was good of him to give Paul McCartney a leg up there, wasn't it? I mean, yeah.
So is that when you've made it too old? When someone says, oh, some young comedian's really giving this Andrew Hansen his first break?
I hope they do. If there's any young comedians listening, I'd love to be on... Love to be on the show.
But, is this your desperate play at the end of the podcast?
It is. But you never get asked to do things, I find, in comedy. You know, you've got to make your own stuff. You must find this in radio too, do you? I mean, you know.
Very much so. I mean, so, I've gotten to the point now I just do my own video sketch stuff as well online because I just sort of got
tired. You have to. No, nobody's going to ring you up and tell you that they want you to be in something, because we're all busy clinging onto the life raft ourselves. You know, we're all trying to do our own thing. Nevertheless, I'll say yes to anybody who rings the phone.
Well, I feel like that's a great note to end this on. Desperate pleas, don't you reckon?
Yeah, I'd like. Okay, let's end it on a desperate plea. Please, please hire me. I'm available.
Andrew, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
It was a shameful pleasure. I'm ashamed to have been here.
Me too.
Thanks for listening to Shame Feeder. Keep up to date by subscribing or liking the Sam Blacker page on Facebook.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.